Time to show the world that top is what I strive for. Greatness is a journey I'm willing to strive for. Consistency is key and I don't take no time off. Against the odds, I put it all on the line for. A lesson learned for every flaw I'm gonna make. Consequence I undertake, putting all my trust in fate. Failure won't become my fate. 10 toes down, I never fold. Give it all to reach my goal. As my name is stone, when my story's told. Say I did it for the...
I didn't prepare, except for you had mentioned that sort of a list of ideas, have a list of ideas and then talk for an hour or so. And I guess the prompt of why you wanted to talk to me was the 100 ideas already. So I didn't prepare another 100 ideas.
Yeah, no problem. So like you're really an idea machine. So I had a look when you sent me this, you have multiple lists, right? You have this newsletter ideas, podcast ideas, and also on Twitter, you just posted something new, which was this Loom folder thing, right? So,
yeah, I mean, because it's very strange to think about this, like from my perspective, that like ideas are easy for me because like I've just always had an engineer's mindset. Meaning my father was a mold maker. And also, are you recording now? Do you want to start? Or do you want to edit?
It's all part of it, but I edit it later, so don't worry.
Yeah, so I grew up the son of a mold maker, a machinist, someone who makes molds for a living for plastics industry. And just his normal like state of mind and his normal day-to-day living and how he like operated his business was like he had to literally know how things are made, right? Most people in the world don't make things at all. Like, I think there's like some stat, even like online, it's like where it's like super easy to make stuff. It's like even on social platforms, it's something like 90% of people just view, 9% of people comment or conversate, and then 1% write.
Right. Most all workers, right? So yeah.
Consider that's like on a medium in which it's like literally the medium is writing, like on Twitter or on Instagram, it's like you post, like you make stuff, like you, and so to think about the real world and think like, yeah, like there are very few people in the world that make stuff now, but it's a very odd for me because that's just my natural state of being when I see people like on Indie Hackers or communities or chat groups that I'm a part of, and they're like, I just don't have any ideas, and I'm like, my problem is I have literally too many.
Right. So this is also something I noticed, and it's really this analogy with idea muscle is totally true. So it's really something you can get into. And once you have like a bit of experience, then you're overflowing with ideas. And exactly the same happened with me. So when I started, I had literally no idea, and now I have too many. Totally true. And yeah. So just, I'm curious, so where are you originally from? Because I guess
I'm originally from Florida, but like spent the last 5 years before becoming a digital nomad, I spent like 5 years in Los Angeles. And then before 5 years in Los Angeles, I spent 5 years working on cruise ships. And then before that, I was in college in Florida.
Cool. And currently, like BetterSheets is your main thing?
I wish it wasn't, but it is. I don't want to be the Google Sheets guy.
Yeah, I saw the discussion about your emoji, right?
Yeah.
on Twitter, someone proposed that you should pick an emoji and like own it. And you picked the globe, I think. And
yeah, and I'm trying to switch it out for a thumbs up. nobody likes it. I don't even know what the tweet is at. The poll is at something. But yeah, exactly. And then my friend James suggested, why not sheets? And I was so hurt by that.
Yeah. And so when did you start BetterSheets? So
started BetterSheets first week of April 2020.
And so it's completely new and but still already profitable. And yeah, you're primarily doing it through AppSumo. Is that right? Or
now, yeah. I mean, that was just a total stroke of luck, which has turned into a little bit of, I don't even know the word. Like if go back like 6 months when I launched BetterSheets, I never expected to put it on AppSumo. I never expected it to be an AppSumo thing. And also I never expected it to sell more than like 100. I thought I had 7 sales in the first month and I thought that was a goddamn success.
Can you maybe summarize shortly what it is about? Because I guess most people have no idea what Better Sheets is.
Yeah, Better Sheets is, I wish I could sum it up. It's supposed to, what it really is supposed to be is like a video course, but it's non-linear. It's a non-linear video course where it's just like a bunch of video tutorials that don't show you like just how to do certain things in Google Sheets. It shows a creative uses of Google Sheets. And then within that creative use, it shows you that this like one functionality or little use case, like thing you can do that you might not have known about, but it shows it to you in sort of a creative way. And that was the original intent, was like, there's so many Googleable answers to certain questions, but there's nobody putting out content about Google Sheets that's like, here's what else you can do. Like, here's something you didn't even think about you could do. I mean, I can tell you the exact story of why I started Better Sheets. It's a bit of a weird story or reason why I started it. So yeah, it ended up being really nice. Like, what happened is like I launched it literally within 24 hours. Like, I thought of it and made 8 videos, put 4 out for free, put 4 behind a paywall, put it on Gumroad, made a Loom folder that was public or semi-private, semi-public. Like, Loom doesn't have an ability to like make a enforceable link, but Gumroad sort of comes in and helps that. And you get a link when you buy the course, but it's not really a course anymore. That's why it was like, it's hard to explain, because it's turned into a community. It's turned into a sort of a productized service where many people, most people actually who sign up and buy it, will email me a question. And the questions are really un-Googleable. Like, you can imagine, like, this person has been, not imagine, some people are like, I've been trying to do this thing for 3 months or 6 months or 3 years, someone said. And like, they asked me and I was like, oh, here's how you do that. And they're like, oh my God, are you kidding me? Yeah. And they're like, that's the best $19 I ever spent. Like, it took me like 3 years of, like, literally I have an email and someone's like, I've been trying to do this for 3 years.
So included is also a community and like free consulting.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's a one-time, I mean, I made this very purposefully as a one-time payment. It's not a monthly fee yet. I'm thinking of changing it up in 2021. And now that I have experience of, like, it's well over 130 videos available for everyone who buys it, immediately you get access to all 130 videos. You get a bit of organized, it's a bit of organized chaos where you get a PDF of, like, here's the videos you should watch first, but like, you can access and watch them all. And then I send out some emails every once in a while. Probably I should get more consistent at it, but I try to do at least once a week, but sometimes I do once a month, sometimes I do 5 times a week if I put out really cool stuff that people are excited about or asked for. Like, last week I put out a sheet of all the videos, which was a very early thing I had, which was a literally just a list of all the videos that existed. But I didn't put it out because it was like only like 20 videos at the time. Now it's 130, 143 videos. And literally every single week somebody asked me, like, is there some other way to like see all these videos? Right. And so like, before this, I put out a PDF of like, here's the best videos you should watch first. Here's how to navigate the Loom folder. And then I just coded like an HTML site and put a member space login in front of that. And like about 300 to 400 people are using that or have access to it, because I'm like, it's not really done. Like, I have so many things I want to add to it, but like, here you can have access if you ask for it. And so like about a third of people ask for it and they have access. But even then it's like, Okay, they have to actively search for all these things. And then Loom changed their, this is a weird thing that happened that you might want to edit out. I'm going on off on this. But Loom changed their interface and it made it like ridiculously hard to see 100 videos. It has a lazy load now. And that's just like a problem I never would have gotten to unless I made 100 videos available for that. And so that's why, like, that idea that you mentioned, that was like, I put it out on that like Idea Hunt site, like, yeah, like, this is probably a problem that no other person has had. Like, they never one thought of putting out a Loom folder as a sellable thing. Two, they never put out over 100 videos. Three, they never had like 1,000 people asking, like, how else can I access this? It's a very weird little Venn diagram of me is probably the only person that asked for
maybe not but could be a
abilities good. From it, like if you could, if you told me that, like if there was a platform 6 months ago that I could just start with one video, make that available for someone to pay for, and then like every succeeding video that I put out is given for free to the people who paid and they're notified, I would have continued putting out 15 videos a week. In the first 6 weeks or so, I put out 15, made 15 videos a week. And like after getting over 100, I was like, oh my God, this is impossible to navigate for a user. And also it's impossible for me to keep up, like telling, I can't email people 15 times a week telling them, here's a new video, here's a new, right. new video. It's like, oh, here's some highlights. And I was like, yeah. So like if you told me, and I actually actively searched for something like Teachable, something like Fresh LMS. I looked for all kinds of learning LMSs, like learning management software that could handle this type of thing. Every single one of them it's a linear video course. You have to put out like 25 things. Here's how a user goes through them. And I was like, I don't know the paths that people are gonna take. Yes, one of the paths is that someone should be able to access every video. That's one. And then I have like some like, oh, these five videos go together. These five videos go together. Yeah, like at the time I had no idea what to do. And so I was like, man, I wish there was something that would allow people to just access this. And I mean, this is a possibility for any type of person, knowledge worker that wants to monetize their knowledge. This doesn't exist. Like you have to create a video course to do this. You have to create that linear thing. Like you start here and end here. I don't know of a solution to sort of say, I'm going to put out a bunch of 100 videos over the next year. You should buy access to them.
Yeah, I love that though. Like a platform for nonlinear video courses is basically what you're getting at. And I think it would be amazing because it's like with books and also in university lectures that this linear structure is horrible because this is just not how most people learn stuff because everyone has different interests and different stuff they learned before. So it's really naive to imagine that one teacher can anticipate exactly what the students need.
Yeah, and from, I mean, this is a unique thing, but having 1,500 people buy it and all have their own unique paths and their own unique questions, it massively, they have more expertise, maybe not expertise is the right word. I don't know what it is. Like that a massive amount of people going through the videos is more correct than anything I could have come up with without them. Like I can put the videos in an order. I have put them in an order by making them in that order. But the person who curates their own path is 1,000 times better than me.
Yeah, they know best, right?
Yeah.
So, and of course, you should be able like give a structure where you think, okay, maybe first this, but this. But otherwise, yeah. Really?
Yeah, right now it's like a PDF that says like, here's sort of five topics that originally I came, and also those were five topics I originally came up with are really vast. Like, here's better design, here's how to do data munging, here's how to do data crunching, here's how to make your sheets go beyond. They're very broad things. And it would be so interesting if I could get a list of like, here are the most taken paths, right? Like here's this video, then this video, then this video. It's like these three videos. And then like, okay, I used to work on a cruise ship and I also used to work on a theme park, Universal Studios. And they tell people that work there that if anyone asks like, where should I go? What are your recommendations of which rides I should see or what shows should I see or what rides should I take? They knew by sheer fact, by also analyzing like which rides and which places do people go to and then rate the park the best. And they knew, go see the Waterworld show, go take the studio tour. They're like, these two things, if a person that comes to this theme park rides those two things, they are so much more open to or presumed to rate the park highly.
Yeah, I love that analogy, like the platform, like the theme park, and you can choose your own path and just go what you think will help you or find enjoyable. And then
literally saying that was the first time I ever thought of it as a theme park. But that is the best analogy. I've never said that analogy before. That is amazing. Yeah, it's like it's not a linear video course. It's a video theme park.
Yeah, and another idea you put out is that you want like copycats. So people should clone your idea and create better eggs, like what you did for Google Sheets for other kinds of stuff, right?
This is sort of like my big failing in the last 6 months. Like within the first month, I knew like this checked off all three boxes that I wanted it to do. One, it was profitable from the get-go. Like literally the very first person who bought it for like $39. And I was profitable from that moment on. Second, there was because of the one-time payment, I wasn't doing monthly, like Laracast, Egghead, those are sort of courses, similarly non-linear course things that I was looking at it. And also, but a more apt comparison is sort of MakerPad. So MakerPad, actually, I went back like 2 years when Ben made his, and he literally said, he's like, I don't want to be on the hook to continue to update this monthly, so I'm going to just charge you one time. And like that lasted for 2 years. And I was like, when I started BetterSheets, I was like, I'm just going to do that. Like that sounds wonderful. Yeah, just take one time payment and I don't have, like this is it was a side project I was doing while building a SaaS product. And I was like, I want to work on the SaaS product so much more, but I really need to make this thing. It was so much energy of like, I need to make this thing that I was like, but I don't want to be on the hook to update it every month. And so that's where the one-time payment came. But it became a beautiful thing. It's an easy buy for people who want to do that thing. They don't have to, if you put a monthly fee, and I noticed this with Laracast when I bought it and tried to learn Laravel, it puts the user on the hook to try it right away, which might sound like a good thing. But some people just aren't ready. Some people are like, I have the cash now. I'll pay for it because I know about it and I don't want to forget about it. I don't want to save it and be like, okay, I'll learn that later. But they also don't want to like take the time. And so Laracast, it's like you pay your $15 for that month and you have to use it or you're going to cancel. Whereas like I get $19 and that's it. Like,
yeah, that's right? Because they also have the idea that people are collecting courses just in case they need it. And this is, I listened to an interview with the founder, Gagan Bayani, and he mentioned that. So they know that most people never watch the courses they buy, and this is why they have like these deals going on all the time, because people are just collecting courses.
Yeah, it's something like 95% of people don't complete a course. And so many people will use that as like a bad thing. They'll say like, oh, 95% of people don't complete these courses. We need to create a new course platform that does better for the, I was going to say user, but it's not user.
No.
And my thinking is like, if you think that 95% of people that buy it don't use it is a bad thing, I'm like, that's a very good thing. That's a lot of revenue.
And so the recurring revenue versus one time is also something I've been somewhat struggling with recently because, you know, I'm putting out these data sets and just like you, I was thinking, of course, it would be awesome. Just put it online, one time fee, that's it. But of course, it's hard to sustain. So you need to find new users every single month. Whereas with the subscription, of course, the income is just dropping in. But for my last project, Newsletters Buy, I gave people the option. So like subscription or one time. Made it really easy, even though you can just subscribe and cancel immediately. And it's basically the same thing. And even the price was the same. But I think 90% did choose the one-time thing.
So do you expect this podcast also like to teach people how to come up with ideas and how to iterate on ideas?
I don't want to narrow the focus.
I'm really gung-ho about formats and like I love talking about processes of ideation, and business model is one of them where it's super easy for me to come up with new product ideas. Because I can just take a product and then map it over a set of different business models. And so like the one time versus the recurring payment versus the price point, like a bit like that's how I will immediately come up with five different products is say, okay, here's the idea. Let's say it's a non-linear video course for a one-time fee. That's BetterSheets. Okay. And it's low, it's $19 at, you know, like a just before I put it on, I started it in 39 and then I increased it after a month to 49. And then after another month, I increased it to 99. And it'll probably go back up to 99 very early 2021. And I'm probably also going to add a monthly. So it's like, it'll be $99 for lifetime, but $19 if you want to try it for the, you know, monthly. And, but that's also a different thing. That when I originally launched it at $39 one-time fee, it's a different product than a $19 a month product. Like a $19 a month is community, plus you get sort of credits for posting or something. I have some idea of like how to limit, how to limit people asking. Like right now, anyone can ask me anything because it's just like, but I came up with that also, that idea of you can ask me anything and it's like a sort of a rolling consultancy, because I was like, what would I do if I charge someone $1,500 a month? That's a totally different product. And that is like an on-demand, like design pickle is like all you can design for like $600 a month. It's like, yeah, I literally sat there and I thought, what would I do if I did exactly this in a nonlinear video course for $1,500 a month? That's a consultant. Someone can ask me anything. Okay, I'll offer that for $19. But I wouldn't have thought of that unless I thought of like, what would I do for someone if I charge them $1,500 a month?
Yeah, that's an awesome perspective and I've never thought about before. So I did this always randomly so far, like deciding on models and pricing. But that's really cool. And have you found any platform or service that would allow you to like do this kind of credit system? Because it sounds really cool where if you sign up, you get like 5 questions, whatever, per month.
Yeah, and then you could buy more, right? Like if you if you sign on for the $19 a month plan, but you're like, this month, I mean, I want to build out this sheet. And I also like, you know, a credit could get you, you know, an answer within 24 hours instead of waiting some, you know, oh, you'll get an answer this week or something. Like, I'm still very hesitant to do what sort of other people will do on a SaaS model, which is like sort of open up and be like, oh, I have to do things every month and have calls or webinars. And I'm like, I really liked it on like the one-time payment and I never have to deal with it again. Well, I'm still like learning coding myself. So like everything now runs on just like no code stuff like Gumroad, Loom, and Google Sheets, but I'm actively learning coding and I have for a few years. And so I'm like, a credit system would just be like, you get the payment, you have a database of a user, and you add 5 credits when payment is complete. Like, I hate to say it, but I'm like, conceptually, it's not hard to think about making a credit system with a Stripe product that says buy 5 credits or add 5 credits when it's a new user for $19 or something.
Right. And I think the perfect place to start would be like a plugin for like Circle is what currently everyone is using, right? This new community platform. And yeah, you could just create a little plugin that would make this possible.
I'm also thinking of doing it in Google Sheets because someone already talked to me about creating a help desk in a Google Sheet. And I'm like, I pretty much did that, but I made a little funny thing called like Google Sheets Stories. And basically I can take the concepts that I did in that and just make like a help desk in a Google Sheet and then use that myself. I already have, all members have access to a site and there's a form there and that form gets to me and I can just check off like, okay, that is complete. Like, and that's just like a help desk. Like, so there's sort of a weird now almost need, like I have to think of how would I do this in Google Sheets first?
Yeah, it's like if your only tool is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? So what I'm curious about is how did you learn all the Google Sheet skills? Because like your backstory was just some college and theme park and cruise ship. I would understand it like if you came from, let's say, financial investment kind of world because they do everything in Google Sheets. But I guess on a cruise sheet, it's not that prominent. So how did you learn Google
Sheets? I mean, sort of like a 2-sentence backstory is I originally was a theater grad. I have a degree in theater from the University of Florida. And my dream and why I did theater was to work in video, TV and film. And my whole goal was to have a job where I had a camera on my shoulder. ended up working on cruise ships for a job out of the 2008 recession. And an odd reason too is I wanted to get out of Florida. I had seen the world in a little bit. I went to Chile and I was like, I want to see more of the world. So I worked on cruise ships for a few years. I ended up seeing the world and loving it. So I ended up leaving the US and going out into the world. So what happened is while I was on the ship and I was working there, they had a job where you were in charge of all of these like digital touch screens around the ship. And it was a very, very new position. In fact, when I got the I ended up getting the position. Spoiler alert. And I was the third person to ever do it. Well, these digital touch screens were run on Windows software on a Mac computer, but they were all linked to a single laptop that I worked off of. So I worked on a cruise ship, but for like the last couple of years that I was working there, I literally worked on like a laptop in a cabin. Like I wasn't like a person out and about in the ship. And one of the roles of this position was I had to take all of the marketing departments, the marketing of every department on the ship and run it through this like digital billboard system. And I was very lazy, as all good programmers are. And I was like, I had to do a lot of copying and pasting and a lot of data entry. Literally every day, like 2 hours of my day was spent doing data entry from this like physical ship schedule into a digital, like basically it was an Excel spreadsheet. And I started learning Excel VBA. One of the things I did was I taught everyone on the ship that had to give me data how to fill that data into an Excel sheet. And then I learned Excel VBA to take that data and move it into where I needed it to go. And so I created a system that literally had never existed before where I could schedule which sheets to pull off of at what time. And so I had scheduled all these digital billboards so that a marketing department could say, I want this image to run between 4 p.m. and 8 p.m. And during that time, each screen was programmed with Excel VBA to say, pull data from these sheets between 4 and 8 p.m. And that's what I did for like 2 years. I just learned Excel VBA. And then it oddly transferred when I went and worked in Los Angeles at a TV network, a brand new startup TV network, and it would have never, what I am about to say would have never worked at a TV network that was established. But basically I started as a PA and 2 weeks into it, I noticed that like everybody used Google Sheets. Everybody in this 30 person like startup TV station used Google Sheets. And so at the end of the day, I would stay for a couple more hours and I started putting together I took all the Excel VBA stuff I learned and I was like, oh, I could write this in Google Script. And I just Googled, how do I take this and copy paste it over here? How do I do this when it changes status? And in 2 weeks, in 2 hours a day after work, while I was still in the office, everybody left and I was just there on a laptop. I created a CRM system for 8 people to use. And the other like 22 people could enter data into this. It was like a really odd problem where like everybody's using Google Sheets, which is everyone can edit, but like how do you manage all that data and how do you manage like where things go? And so I did that in about 2 weeks. I put together the CRM, I showed it to like my bosses, and they're like, this is awesome, let's use it right away. And 2 months later I got a promotion from a PA to like this like data ops, and ultimately like it just kept getting bigger and bigger, and I did like literally all of the operations of a television network in Google Sheets. And that lasted for about 4 to 5 years. And like everybody that came in and had a new job, I had to like teach them how to use this Google Sheet. And then every single time someone would try to learn it, I would like fix it a little, iterate it a little, like, oh, make it a little nicer, user oriented. And then like a new boss came in and was like, we need to do this other thing. And I started doing data modeling for influencer campaigns. I started doing like reports in Google Sheets for clients that were like paying us like $250,000. And it's like, and we just give them access to a Google Sheet. I'm like, oh, let me make this a little nicer. And so, yeah, like it was like 5 years of just Googling every day. How to do X, how to do Y, how to do Z.
Yeah, that's awesome. And probably the best way to learn, that will just by your own interest driven and solving problems you have yourself, right? So really cool, really cool backstory. And you mentioned, like, before you ended up doing Better Sheets, you worked on a SaaS product. And what happened to, is it still live or what happened?
No. So I ran a newsletter for 3 years. I have run a newsletter for 3 years. And 2 years ago, I knew that I was already selling sponsorships and I knew I wanted to create an easier way to sell sponsorships. And so I met a guy whose name is Anthony Gore. We started a year ago creating, he also runs a newsletter. And a year ago, we started a Hype Letter, which is a creator side tool for just managing, to sell and manage the ads that you sell in your newsletter. We launched it. So one of the reasons why I started Better Sheets is because, like, we had started Hype Letter a year ago, but in like March and April of this year, we had a version that we wanted to do, and I handed it over to Anthony. But like, then I was like, okay, my job is done, I guess. Like, I just have to wait. And I was like, I really want to launch something. Like, this sucks that I don't have control. Like, he's a CTO, he's coding it. I have nothing to do other than like keep talking to users. And like, I can't really talk to users when it's like being built. He ended up finishing it like end of May. And so, you know, in April, I was like, well, I just want to launch, I don't want to launch something that is going to be like a large project that's going to keep me busy for the next, you know, year. I have this other thing that I'm doing. And so that's why, one of the reasons why Better Sheets is like a one-time payment. I'm not on the hook to continue doing it, because I was like, I'm just waiting for this thing to be built. It was built. It was built end of May. We got it running. We got the payment set up. And it was awesome because it allowed me to sell a couple $1,000s of ads in my newsletter without a bunch of work. It saved me a bunch of time. It did exactly what we needed it to do. And then I was the only user of it. And like for 3 months, I couldn't get a single other user.
Oh, that's crazy. So what exactly was the product? Because I didn't fully understand what Hype Letter was supposed to do.
You're totally right, because it's hard to explain, because we could never get the messaging down, and like, so no one could like really, like I had to do a lot of the onboarding. So if you have a newsletter, you have like specific dates you want to sell, and usually a lot of time is spent going back and forth with someone asking the same questions. When's the next available ad date? How much is it? What are your stats? Blah, blah, blah. And we put that all into a page on your website and made it super simple for you to just like say, I sent my newsletter on Monday, then here's 3 months of ads to sell. Here's the price that I want to sell it at. And it was a simple button for buyers to buy an ad in your newsletter. You got an email that said somebody bought this date and now it was blocked for others. So there's a little like, it's like a Calendly for selling ads.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I've seen people do this with Google Sheets all the time.
Exactly.
This is what everyone seems to be using now.
Yeah, so that started with like Dense Discovery did that. Kai of Dense Discovery did that, and a lot of people copy him because he actually put out a how to do that. And this is a weird thing too, is I just released a Google Sheet template that I'm selling called Newsletter Creator. And one of the things that I made like literally just a few weeks ago was a Hype Letter knockoff in Google Sheets, which is, it says like, you set your dates and then it automatically creates a page where people can go and find your price and pay you in a Google Sheet. And also, when we were trying to sell people on Hype Letter, one of the problems we kept running into was people that wanted to use it already had a Google Sheet and were already selling their ads. So it was one of those ideas that like, we were correct to have the idea a year ago. We were correct to build the product in, you know, May of this year, but the people that, the specific like 100 people that we were trying to sell to, like that was my personal goal, was to talk to 100 people and get them some amount of them to use this product. And we got 1%, and it was me. I was the only user.
Yeah, that sucks, of course. But I'm curious, though, if you know your Google Sheet is doing better than Hype Letter ever did, but probably it's hard to tell because it's like a package, right? It's not just this one template that you're selling.
I think there's a few reasons why Hype Letter didn't work. And I would say most of them are self-inflicted. I don't think that the idea was bad. I think the execution was, and myself included, like the messaging, it's really, unless I get it right away, like it's really hard for me to iterate and figure out what the messaging should be. Like I literally talked to 100 people, probably 120, because I talked to a bunch of like mentors and people that weren't going to buy the thing ever. And I talked to them about the messaging and they gave me feedback of like, oh, you should say this, this, and this. I was like, oh yeah, you're right. But with Better Sheets, like the messaging came out right away. Like it was so simple. And it wasn't a clear success right away. I sold only 7 in the first month, but like it had an influencer, right? It was like Noah Kagan and the AppSumo team saw the potential in this. And it's really funny having them on, like with me and on board, completely changed the direction of Better Sheets, because the page on AppSumo itself was written by them.
Really?
And it's so good.
Yeah. Super cool, because I know that a lot of people are complaining about AppSumo, like shady tactics, and mm-hmm. that they are taking a huge cut of the profits. And I wasn't aware that they are doing really work like this.
Yeah, they do all everything. I gave them the seed of the idea. I mean, it's my product, but they wrote all the copy on the page. They push it out to their network of like 1 or 2 million people. It's like, the amount of money it would take, like I actually have tried to do this math of like, how much money would it take me to get to reach 1 million people through Google ads, Facebook ads, content marketing, all of it, anything that's at my disposal, how much time and money would it cost to get in front of 1 million people is like, I'd pay a lot for that.
Yeah, and you're paying nothing for AppSumo, right? You only pay them when you earn. So it's like affiliate marketing in some sense. And yeah, it's an awesome, honest.
So with Hype Letter, I was the only person hyping it, because I built the thing, my co-founder, Anthony, and I, we built it for ourselves. Like he ran a newsletter, I ran a newsletter. We both sold ads. We knew so intrinsically what we needed because we were doing it. And we thought so much about like, what needed to happen, because we needed it to happen for ourselves. And there was just a huge problem in the way that like we messaged it to other people that literally no one else would use it. And I was like, but I know it works because I'm making money from it. I see the money coming in and I see all the time I'm saving because I get to go work on Better Sheets while like I sell ads in my newsletter. I don't have to divert my attention to it. I just see the Stripe payment. So that's like a really heartbreaking thing of 2020 for me. It was like, yes, Google Sheets is a great, or Better Sheets is a great success. And I found a huge market, you know, in Google Sheets usage. And maybe that's probably the real lesson to learn is like, there's just not a lot of newsletter writers that are selling ads in a newsletter. Like, and those who do sell an ad in a newsletter find their own solution with Google Sheets, or some people will use Patreon. Some people will have used Gumroad to sell. Someone used just a Stripe implementation. Stripe on card was easy for me to do. Yeah, like I think the lesson learned is like, yeah, it just wasn't a large market. We made a perfectly fine product that worked, but it didn't have the like gloss and glisten of like making it easy to self-serve. It was a lot of sales calls and me saying, here, let me walk you through it. I even bought $1,000 of ads in other people's newsletters just to make sure that like, I was like, are we sure that the thing works? I'm the only one making money. Maybe it only works for my Stripe account, but we made sure, okay, can I pay you through this? But yeah, a lot more people use Google Sheets than run newsletters.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And also something I noticed when I worked on newsletters by, because a lot of people asked me to add a field that says whether or not a newsletter includes ads. So I tried to find a way to find out if a newsletter has ads and search for like code words like sponsored by. And yeah, I had problem finding like 10 or so in order to extract these signals. And I was okay. It was already hard, but maybe I'm just bad at searching. But then I ran it through like all 20,000 Substack newsletters and I only found around 100 or 150 or so. So maybe my code is just bad, but I think there are newsletter ads, at least on Substack, are not really a thing.
So I've talked to Chris Best at Substack. I have emails with him. When I was doing Hype Letter, I actively like watched Substack grow, right? Substack has massively grown this year, but like I've been in newsletters for 3 years and I started my Substack in like July of 2019 or something. I use the product and I talked to Chris about this and I asked him like, would he be interested in having ads in Substack? And vehemently 100% no. They are not interested in any way whatsoever of having ads associated with Substack, which is heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking for a lot of reasons. Mostly like the ad industry just has such a bad rap, which is weird. Like makes a lot of money for a lot of people. That's why we have TV. That's why we have Facebook. That's why we have Google. It's like ads are a huge business. But, you know, as a startup, they really have to be a different model. It's about differentiation. It's not about doing the same thing everyone else has done. And it is creating a brand new revenue stream that never existed before. So I'm fully on board with what Substack is doing. But yeah, you're going to find that their ethos is counter to ads so that people who are Substack writers or writing on Substack will have that ethos. I've talked to many of them. I'm part of a lot of newsletter communities. And I've talked to a bunch of newsletter writers I literally had a designation in my CRM of will not run ads. I'll just never run an ad. And I hope for their own sake and for their own revenue sake that they'll reconsider at some point. But I don't think that exists yet. And that's actually sort of one idea that I'm not sharing with anyone is I have a new idea that I'm running with based on my experience with newsletter ads. Like newsletter ads don't have to suck. I think perhaps one of the ways to get around people not wanting to run ads is to make ads better, because ads don't necessarily have to be porn pills and like, it's not bad stuff. Like indie makers want to run ads all the time. Like I literally tried to spend $1,000 in newsletter ads and it was hard. It was very difficult. I tried to spend $1,000 in podcast ads and that was literally impossible.
That's crazy. You're standing there with cash in your hands and take it.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the ideas in that list of like podcast ideas. I was like the existing platforms that exist to run podcast ads right now have a minimum threshold of $2,500. I know it because I signed up for all of them. I did sales calls with all of them. I said, I have $1,000. Can I spend this with you? And they're like, no. I was like, what? Are you kidding me?
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's such a small market, right? Like consider how many literal people in the world have $1,000 to spend on podcast ads. Probably not a lot. But also I think of like, if I could, maybe there would be more people that want to spend $1,000 on podcast ads.
Exactly. And I personally think that there's a huge opportunity because no one has figured this out. And I also wanted to run like newsletter ads just as an experiment, quite similar to to what you just talked about. And I had a look at like the newsletters that are selling ads and they seemed overpriced to me, and my biggest problem probably was that there was no way to verify the metrics they are providing. So if someone tells me he has 20,000 subscribers and click-through rate, whatever, how do I know that's true? And of course, afterwards, you can always say, yeah, maybe it was just your product or whatever.
Yes, I don't want to be glib, and I am literally in the middle of building an idea that like I don't want to share because I have like 3 years of research behind this and I'm like so dead. Like, I think like it's so weird that I've heard a couple of other people almost talk about building, or I've seen like people launch stuff in the last 3 months that is like, they are so close to figuring out not what I'm doing, but like the same thing. And I'm like, but I know they're not doing it, but I don't really want to share it yet.
Yeah, that's perfect.
What I'm building is like literally the solution to exactly that. It's like, how do you verify anything? How do you verify that it ran? How do you verify opens? How do you verify rates? How do you standardize the payment? Because you're right. I did an analysis about 2 years ago before I started Hype Letter. This is something I can share because it's really fun. Is I looked at 300 newsletter prices and this was after I set my own price and I knew my own price and I knew how I I always increased my prices, like my subscriber count went up, but I also increased my prices, demand went up. And I had this unique viewpoint of being a newsletter and also analyzing the 300 prices. Two things stood out to me over anything else. And from the analysis, I saw that one, newsletter ad rates, they're just making it up. Like each single person is making it up based on their own biases. But there's sort of like a weird like beauty in that, because then you get the crowd is smarter than the individual. So individual prices will be overpriced, but everyone collectively will tell you sort of where it should go. The only information I didn't have at that time was this is the price that they are selling, but not, you don't know what the advertiser bought at, which was like the big secret that I had was I had an advertised price, but I gave huge amount of discounts for all types of things. It's like someone that I was like, oh, I want to run that. Yeah, you only have $100, but it's $250. Sure, I'll run it. Oh, you want to buy, it's a $99 ad, but you want to buy 10 of them? I'll give it to you for $500. Like that kind of thing. So I was like, oh, so individuals are wrong, but the collective is probably to some degree correct. The other thing that I noticed about humans and setting prices of advertising rate, they were leaving money on the table by delaying raising the rates and raising rates in increments of 50. So there was, I have literally a graph that shows all 300 prices and mapped out on subscriber count versus price. And there's a, if you just like graph all the, if you look at all of the dots, there's these weird horizontal lines as you go up. Everyone is going up and to the right as they get more people, their advertising rates go up. But there's like five people at like with 500 or 1,000 subscriber difference, and they're all priced at $200. And then like there's a bunch of people priced at $250, a bunch of people priced at $300. And I was like, they're literally leaving money on the table by delaying raising their rates, but also by only incrementing them by these like big chunks. They're like, if you raise your rate as you went, like from 253 to 274 to 283, it's like that adds up after a few weeks or even a few months. And I ran this number of these 300 newsletters. I found the difference between what should they charge versus what they are charging. And the difference was every year they were leaving $1.8 million on the table.
That's nice. That's really cool. Did you ever share? Yeah. Did you ever share it?
Yeah, I heard it somewhere. I forget exactly, but like that. But also, I didn't really share it publicly because that was the initial idea of Hype Letter. Was like, if we could have this rate, the standardized rate that like went up, and each person knew that they were charging the right amount, and the advertiser knew they were buying at the right amount. Like all those things have to come in together. But this sort of standard rate, you need a third party to verify and to say, okay, this is the right rate at the right time. Yeah, and I was like, well, even if I just charge the difference, that's a $1.8 million business. Like, it's awesome. I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. Why doesn't YC give me $120,000? They didn't, yeah. Narrators.
It's really fascinating. So now I'm of course curious what you think is a fair price for a newsletter ad. Because this is what I was struggling with. And when I had a look at I did the math myself, and it made absolutely no sense to me, the prices people were charging. As you said, they were completely made up, and I had no idea why people were paying it. So, and
but
maybe.
Did you talk to them?
No. And this is what I was just thinking, maybe if you just go to them and ask for a discount, whatever, probably it's not the real price, but still.
I mean, there's just so many reasons you run an ad, right? Like individual, like there's so many reasons that you yourself are going to run an ad, but there's also a lot of different reasons why someone's going to accept your ad. There's also very different types of ads you can run. Like now what's gaining traction, because I sort of said this one, because Kai from Dense Discovery runs classifieds, but two, also because I keep pushing people. I'm like, why don't you just run like a bunch of class, like just run text ads. Like, why do you have to like have a sponsor ad? Like I ran text ads in my newsletter in addition to a big sponsor at the top for the last year and a half. And it was like, that makes me a ton of money. It makes me like $200 a week extra over my sponsored ad. Like, I was like using this as an example and telling a lot of newsletter writers, just make more money by adding this other ad. So like, yes, you can sponsor a newsletter and get like a banner image and stuff. But if you go to them and are like, one, if you give them your product and you're like, if it's a product they can use and accept and they make a more branded content kind of thing, they really just write about your product in sort of a long, lengthy thing. Maybe it'll cost more, but it'll probably convert way higher. The opposite is true. Give them a free product. They like it. Okay, I'll run a text ad for, you know, 50% of the price of the top ad. Dense discovery, I ran a $69 ad, and it was at the time that I was charging $99, and I got one sale that day. Like, it paid for itself right away.
Yeah, but close. It's still close. And so like the analysis I made were quite similar, where let's say you have a newsletter with 500 people or 1,000 people, whatever. And then you can have a look at the click-through rate, which is, I don't know, maybe 10% or even lower, usually for an ad, even lower. And then you can look at your conversion rate, which will probably be 10% or even lower. And then if you do the math, well, it's you can't expect a lot. And you said that people run ads for many reasons, but I think most people run it to make sales, at least in our little bottle. So I know, of course.
Yeah, so what I mean by that, though, sorry to cut you off, but the one thing you're not counting on in your math, because there's no math to really use here, is influence.
Brand, like, awareness, you mean?
Yeah, brand awareness is like one level of like that people just know you exist. But like, for there are certain newsletter writers that I know what they write about, but two, like how they write about it, and three, who their audience specifically is. Those three things, you can't put a price on it. And I'll pay whatever they want to make that person happy. And just that, and also that's also one of the reasons why I spend $1,000, is I didn't want to have to pick apart every single piece of it. I knew that there was, you know, three or four people in that list that probably I'm not going to make one or two sales off of that day that they run their ad. But you know what? Like, I want to support them. Like, and I think that they should exist. And consider that newsletters right now are sort of a bastardized blog, because they exist continually. And now, if there's a Substack a post, or they run their own blog with their newsletter archives or MailChimp archives, that there is now, I did $1,000 of newsletter ads. I think I ran, I can bring it up, but it's like, a dozen ads. That's a dozen backlinks. That could be a dozen backlinks that I paid for. Obviously, people listening to this who actually are savvy at SEO are going to be like, oh, MailChimp has a nofollow, Substack has nofollow. Like, you don't actually Google.
Yeah.
But maybe you do. Like, that's why I think, like, consider going to people you actually like their writing, you think that they are writing to the right audience, and think of it more like influencer marketing, which is my background, which so makes it easy for me to think about that, of like, I'm not necessarily looking for every single one of these people to accurately hit their sales marks that I need at that price. But overall, the entire campaign should come out ahead. And also, this is also a very personal reason that I wanted to run $1,000 of ads, is like, I knew, like, even if I break even, I know I've increased the total cachet of the newsletter ad world. And I can use this as a case study of, like, I ran $1,000 of ads. So it's like, yeah, probably it wasn't super effective. I probably didn't get the 12x or 12-to-1 return on ad spend that I would get if I spent $1,000 on Facebook ads. But also now I have the experience of talking to those people, spending money with them. I supported good creators, good writers. Now I also have data that I can go back and double check against Facebook ads, Google ads, you know, just to make sure. That those are also those reasons that anybody can have, not just me personally.
Yeah, you're right. That's a great way to think about it. And if you reduce it literally to conversions and the bare numbers, most make no sense. But like, mm-hmm. if you, of course, want to support the writer and see it more like a donation, okay, yeah. Then you can justify like paying too much, I think. then.
Yeah, and again, I'm not gonna go too much into this, but also, I mean, I literally had a 1-to-1 ratio of like, no matter what happened, I was gonna come out ahead, because at the time I was building Hype Letter, which is a newsletter ad product. And it's like, who better to run through, like, does this product work than like the person who made it? Like, why don't I just, I literally was like, why am I not spending money on newsletter ads for like a month or two while we were running Hype Letter and trying to make sales, like get people to use it? I kept thinking like, why am I not spending money on newsletter ads? Why don't I do that to just test my product? Like, that's a great way to come up with a product idea too. It's like, just do stuff, just make a business, just try to run ads. Like, if you want to do Facebook ad optimizations, first you should probably get some data points. So run a Facebook ad, like spend $1,000 on Facebook ads and then see if your product optimizes it better.
Yeah, this is great advice, I think, with just do stuff and the ideas will come natural to you, because like your previous idea with the course platform or also the consulting tokens and now the newsletter ad thing are all things that come directly from your own experiences, right? You're not like sitting there doing market research and thinking about what could nurses need right now, whatever, right? And I think these are the best ideas and those that really have a chance of being successful. So I'm really looking forward to whatever you will launch, because it's as I said, it's something I'm struggling with myself. And
you're struggling to launch. You launch every week, or no, every 2 weeks.
No, I mean with newsletter ads, I'm struggling. Not in general, I'm not struggling. No, I'm doing fine. So, yeah, I guess the time, the 1 hour is over, but we didn't get into your lists at all, which of course is not a problem, because I think we talked about lots of cool ideas already. And
we can keep going. I mean, if you have to run, it's your lunch.
Oh, no. Yeah. So however you want, we can either continue now, or we can also like do another episode however you want. So I'm really flexible.
I have a weird like thing where, so one of the reasons why I put out that like 100 business ideas with Google Sheets and Gumroad was I made it as like a test for myself of like, can I come up with like 100 ideas that like ends up being a checklist for myself to make? And I know you don't want to get into how to generate ideas, but like giving myself a goal of generating 100 ideas is a way to generate ideas. Like, I have to think of so many weird things. Like, you just got to keep going out on a limb that like, I have now in front of me a whiteboard of like 5 ideas based on that 100 ideas. So I'm like, oh, I want to make that. Like, I'm not going to make that I'm gonna allow someone else to do it. But like, if I can make it, you know, in a couple of days in a Google Sheet, then I will.
Yeah, I would love to hear about your ideas for generating ideas. So your methods, because you just said that I have no interest. So that's not true. I would love to hear.
Oh, well, the two main ways, the two most fun ways is the, just think of like what would you do for some, like once you have the idea of the who you want to build for, what would you do for them if they paid you $1,500 a month? And you can set the number to whatever you need to, like, is like a good big number for you. Like, some people might be, you might be able to generate ideas if it's like, what would you do if somebody paid you $1 million? I think that's a little fanciful, but like, you know, you might come up with like, optimize their Facebook ads by, you know, 10% could make them $1 million in return. The other way that I like to come up with ideas is have a bad ideas brainstorm session. Have you ever done this?
No.
My God, it's so much fun. But you have to like find someone that you are really comfortable saying very bad things to or with. Like, it's a very bro-y thing and a very like white boys sort of jock talk. But like, I've come up with some amazing ideas based on like some really, really bad ideas. And you literally start off by saying like, what is the worst thing you could do? What is the thing you will never do in this space? And that's where you start. And then you realize like by putting your brain and your thought, like you now create this thing, this terrible thing that shouldn't exist. But then your brain does something weird where it tries to logically make it be like, no, it can exist because of X, Y, and Z. And you start to come up with like really good ideas from it. Like really heartful and soulful ideas based on this really bad thing.
Yeah, this reminds me of like Julian Shapiro put out this tweet about the creativity faucet where you just have to get all the bad ideas out and then all the good stuff will start coming afterwards. Like first time clearing the wastewater and afterwards, yeah, great stuff will happen. And he used it just for writing, but it's exactly, I think it works exactly the same for entrepreneurship, for producing ideas. So the method makes a lot of sense. So I should definitely try this. Sounds awesome.
I mean, and it's really, again, it's like super easy for me to come up with ideas because I have like 10 a day, what are considered good ideas, I guess. But yeah, so someone that I was like in a, you know, weekly call with for a while, like a mastermind group, said like, you know, all entrepreneurs, makers, indie hackers, like have ideas. It's like really the ones who don't get distracted. Like we all have good ideas. And also consider like how ideas are totally different. Ideas could be, you could have a great idea for a promotional tool or a promotional aspect or a feature. Not all ideas are business ideas. And that's sort of where I'm going in like the Google Sheets realm is like, a lot of people are buying it that have businesses already. They're not like looking to start a business in a Google Sheet or use it, like, but they are looking for, you know, how can we do sales better or do something else with sales or promote our product better or add like a little checklist. Like instead of having to put together hiring a developer to add a page to our site that's an interactive checklist, can we make that a Google Sheet? Yes, you can do that within 30 minutes. Embed a Google Sheet as a checklist. So yeah, I think having a good way of having a lot of ideas, like coming and being safe too, that bad ideas thing is like, it could go really bad. You could get a really good, bad harassment suit if you say the wrong thing to the wrong people in the wrong room.
So don't do it publicly, yeah.
I mean, but also like write it out, like do it like as a brainstorm session. I think that also, maybe that's, I don't know if that's helpful or not, but you know, the way that I came up with 100 ideas is I started the Google Sheet. I said, I'm going to write 100 ideas. It's like, have that session, like have that time that you will write down anything. You'll take any idea and like run with it and morph it. And also just having a good amount of formats to pull from, being able to know what are all the business models. Just write a list of business models and have that around all the time. For every brainstorm session, say, okay, take an idea, now run it through every business model. Now that's 5 more ideas. What are the mediums that you're going to put this out in? What's the distribution way? Have 5 distribution platforms that you know. Like putting out a product on Gumroad is going to be different than if I hosted it myself with a Stripe button. Making it a SaaS is going to be different than if it's a consultancy agency model. Marketplace is going to be different than a network. Yeah, like there's a lot of things that you can say, I have an idea for X, but then add in, I'm going to sell it for $1. I'm going to sell it for $10, $100, $1,000. That's 4 different ideas.
Yeah, I think I understand what you're getting at and I really like it. So it's like a mix and match. So you have like a bag with people you want to serve. Then you have a bag with business models and then you have a bag with pricing, with the prices. And then you pull out one from each and combine it and you end up with something, right? So it's Twitter users and subscription or Gumroad product and then a $1,000 price point, whatever.
You could do this because didn't you do on your product explorer, just have the 4 buckets and then just click refresh on every single one of them. Or what I would do is a Google Sheet that like generates them automatically. You fill in the 4, like you fill in the X and then it automatically says X for this, X for that with this. So it has like, if you have 4 categories with 4 objects in each, it's 4 times 4 times 4 times 4, which is what's 4?
Four
calculators now. That's 256 ideas.
It's a lot. So what was the fourth bucket? Because
I guess price point would be 1, business model, who it's for. Wait, is that it? Is it only 3 then?
Yeah, I think it's a way to start, but maybe you can also add like a, oh no, that wouldn't work, like a prompt, but I think it's already a great strategy. because what you mentioned is like, I have this also little tool I launched a little while ago, which is just prompts. And
yeah. For every prompt, add those three buckets. So it's going to be 64. So each idea times 64, just add a random price point. What would you do for, and I guess it's only going to be order of magnitudes are going to be different, right? Like, oh, I guess free, like, because freemium model is going to be different than a paid model too. So what, how would you make this product for free? How would you make this product for $1, $10, $100, $1,000? Then what's the business model? Oh, I guess that's it. Okay, wait, there's price point. There is business model. And I'm going to get this wrong, but is that like one-time payment versus, oh yeah, I guess that's another bucket. It's like how often or recurring is the payment? Is it one-time or is it recurring versus what's the business model? Is it a SaaS, is software as a service? Is it a marketplace? Is it a agency marketplace? Is it a network? Is it, I don't know what other business models there are. I know what they are. I mean, I think of them all the time, but like, are you making money through transactions? Are you making money through a fee? Are you making money from the, oh, and then I guess where you get the money. Are you making money from the user or are you making money from transactions? Which side are you making the money from? Buyers or sellers, if it's a marketplace. And then what's the other bucket? Who it's for? But who it's for is so infinite. Like you could be like, it's for millennials. Or you could say it's for dogs or for humans or for creators or for 39-year-olds in Pakistan. It's, you know, for Africans with a net worth of over $50,000. Like it's for, you know, Asians with a net worth under $100,000. Like there's so many demographics and psychographs you could also do.
I think the toughest challenge then is that, as we said before, the best approach is probably solving stuff you know about, right? So in then it becomes really about doing market research and trying to anticipate what kind of problems, like the groups you have.
I think that's an easy thing to say, honestly. And I don't think it's a very easy to do is like to make things for yourself. Like, I mean, developers, we all make things for ourselves because we just like hack stuff together, right? Like we understand, like that's sort of what I started with is like, I have this weird way of looking at the world that I suddenly can understand how things are made because I've seen factory, a manufacturing plant. I've worked in my dad's shop when I was 12 years old making molds. Not everybody has that skill. Not everybody understands, but also people aren't dumb. Like, you know, like I'm not a country boy. I grew up in the city. And like when I was 12, you know, like I knew where food came from. It was a farm because I'm not dumb. People aren't dumb, but like it is weird. I think it's easy to say like, let's just make stuff for ourselves because then you're just making it for developers. But like if you can really identify someone you really want to help in the world, like my aunt is an artist. I wouldn't consider myself an artist anymore. I used to make videos, but I wasn't a painter. I wasn't someone making tactile art. And also art is very different than making, you know, say a video, a commercial video. They like, she makes a painting. She does a painting or a new piece of art and it takes her, you know, 3 months. That's something I don't know, but I would love to make something for her because I want her to make more money from her art. And I think it's actually sometimes easier to, it's easier if we have access to the people, not if we do it ourselves. DoorDash is actually a really good example of this. Did you see like there is an their original YC application video?
No.
Okay, so if anyone's listening to this years in advance, right, like just last week or something, DoorDash went for an IPO and made like billions of dollars, and all of the founders are billionaires now. Their YC application video is on YouTube now, and in that they said, They're all like Stanford CS grad, like they were in Stanford CS grads. They're not restaurateurs, but they went and they interviewed 100 restaurants and asked them like, what's your biggest pain point and stuff and talked to them. And they were in their video, they were like, we were surprised, but most of the people said that they don't do the delivery, but they want to. And that's how they came up with DoorDash. It's like, then what they did is then they became the deliverers and they were like, us four, we actually do the deliveries. So now we know how to optimize it. So like they didn't originally get into it because they were restaurateurs, but they then went and did the delivery. So it's like, do you have access to those people? Like, do you know 100 artists? Do you know 100 painters who are trying to sell, you know, $2,000 pieces of work during a pandemic? Do you have access to, you know, fair Do you know Faire? It's another YC company. F-A-I-R-E. It's like they sell wholesale like products to retailers, and it's like boutique items. And they found out that like the number one seller in retail stores was new items, but like that stores didn't have a system to get new items. They were like, yeah, we sometimes get new items. And those sell better than anything else. They had access to those people. They weren't making retail businesses.
Yeah, really interesting. But I think the examples are like venture capital. And it's, I think, yeah, I'm not sure how well it works for if you're just an indie maker, right? So because I'm just currently trying to think of examples, and I think most indie makers who are somewhat successful build stuff for themselves or for the girlfriend. I think these are the, of course, yeah. I mean, it can work to do something different, but for most of them, or do you know any example where the story is a different one?
Yeah, I mean, you're mostly right, because indie makers don't necessarily have the need also to step out of what they're doing. Like, it's going to be a little bit of a survivorship bias, where the successful ones, like, why are they successful? It's because they like inherit, as an indie maker, who stays an indie maker, they know what they make inherently. Oh, Patty O'Levin. Oh my God, Patrick McKenzie. Like, his two products were bingo card creator, and it was like sold to teachers. He wasn't a teacher. And then appointment reminder, and it was like for small businesses to remind themselves of appointment, or remind their customers of appointments. He, like, I think he found out like dentists were using it. He's not a dentist.
That's true. That's one example.
Maybe because I struggled to find examples. I wish there were more examples of that. Like, I mean, that's what we did at Hype Letter, is like, yes, we ran newsletters ourselves, and we took a lot of inspiration from running newsletters. But I also talked to 100 newsletter writers, and I took far more. We closed the business because we talked to 100 people. Like, if we didn't, we would still be working on it to this day if we didn't talk to people. Like, we would just be like, oh, let's just make this a little bit better for ourselves. Let's make this. And we would keep working on it, and there would be no market for it. And it's like, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to continue working on something for 5 years and not make any money. Like, we made, I think, we made $1,700 in last year by just being an agency model. And then in 2020, we made like $220 by running a SaaS. And it was like, yeah, I don't want to go through another year and a half making another $200.
Yeah, I think this is also something what lots of people are noticing right now, that it's really tough to get started with a SaaS, right? It's much easier to get started with something like you're doing or what I'm doing. Yeah, which isn't a SaaS product, like doing a little course, a little info product, selling data, doing a GG stack product, right?
Yeah, or LagStack. But I think also these kinds of easy, simple info products become SaaS. Like, or you test out, like, if it has to be a SaaS. SaaS is very specific, software as a service. So that there's two things that are there, software and service. It's like, does this thing need to be software? Yes or no? Well, it could use software. It could, like, you can run an agency that is an agency model, but on the back end is software. A lot of examples from the influencer marketing world for that, like, there's a huge company called Whaler, which is an agency. They do influencer marketing. They originally started as a watch company that they found out, oh, these Instagram ads that we're running with these Instagrammers where we send them a watch, those are working really well. Let's create software to run that better. So it ran, and they did. They created, the two founders made software that ran their campaigns better. Then they literally went and tried to sell it to other companies. They're like, use this software. And they're like, actually, can you just run it for us? And so now they're an agency that is software dependent of their own software, but they're an agency. They're not a SaaS. Similar to Branded Entertainment Network, which is partly owned by Bill Gates. It's like, Bill Gates isn't running an agency, but he is. It's called Branded Entertainment Network, but they have an AI department that is, I mean, they're very public about this. I'm not giving you any inside information. They have press releases of like, our AI is doing this and that and this. They're software, but they're not software as a service. They're an agency that uses software. There's a lot of software in the world. I don't necessarily think that SaaS is eating the world. It's getting bigger. But, you know, it was, oh, who said it? P. Marco Andreessen, right? Said software is eating the world. He didn't say SaaS is eating the world. Software as a service is eating the world.
Yeah, I think, yeah, the lines are somewhat blurry, right? So I think what people call SaaS is just software with a subscription. So at least that's
yes, that is software as a service is exactly that. Yeah, recurring revenue. And you have to create a business that needs to be recurring, right? Like if you don't create, this is a weird thing. I have a lot of indie maker friends that are like making software as a service, and they honestly and truly should and do look at churn. They're like, they look at churn as a bad thing. I think of churn as like, maybe you just need to change your business model. Like, there are so many options. Like, maybe you shouldn't be charging, you know, $49 a month. Maybe you should be charging $200 flat fee and or a yearly subscription, or don't even charge at all for a subscription and have some kind of freemium model.
Yeah, or do one-time usage, right? If you just want to edit like one image, it's $1, whatever.
Yeah, and there's the credit system, like to have people pay as they go. And also like, every business is different. Like I have two friends, one that runs a company based on credits and one that runs a company based on subscription or MRR. And the one that's running credits is not doing as well as the one that's running on a subscription. But like, they also do a lot of freelance work and they like it. And they don't devote 100% of their time to their business. Whereas the person who runs the SaaS is like, I'm here every day, I'm doing customer service, I'm building it for an event, like maybe not an eventual exit, but you know, I want to continue seeing this line go up and to the right. So two things, I need to do sales, marketing, and look at my churn. Whereas the people who are running the credits are like, you know what, we really don't want to build our business that way. We want to build our business so that like we do a good thing in the world. That's it. That's all they care about.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And, oh, that's probably like another thing is like having an idea of what your business should be. If you don't match it to like who you are, if there's not a founder product fit, it'll never work.
Yeah. You have to enjoy what you're working on, right?
Yeah. Eventual exit. Understand like, oh, I'm going to work on this for 1 year and then exit in some capacity.
Right. Yeah. So I have to run now.
We are already. It's been a pleasure. If I talk too much, I talk on and on and on.
No, that's why you're here for. That's why I invited you to hear you talk. But really, we could do another episode and talk a bit more about your other ideas we didn't get into this time. But just we can do it like asynchronously, right? Thank you so much.
I'm more than happy to talk about ideas. That's like, it's so distracting though, because I'm like really trying to like, I've been doing this now for like 3 months. I'm like, okay, I really got to like focus and build this. So why I'm hesitant to tell the idea of this new product is because I'm building it myself. So I'm learning, like I learned Node.js, I learned Express, I built the back end already. I have to learn like API, I have to learn front end now. I already did like Bulma and like CSS and stuff, but I really like, it's really crafting it with my own fingerprint on it. So it's going so slow and I really, products have been so fast.
It's kind of addicting. And did you validate like your new thing in any way already, or do you have like plans?
Sort of. So I did have and sorry if I'm going to make this long, I'll try to make this short. Okay. So I did have a little bit of a hesitation of like, is this right? Like, wait, but I really know. I'm like, this is the next iteration from 3 years of experience of in the newsletter world. I'm like, I was like, I'm 100% convinced it'll work, but I did have that, like, let's just make sure. Like, let's figure out what a validation should be. So I sent some emails to people and I said, you know, would you spend money on this? And the few people that did. So I have like some money earmarked. People said, yeah. And that's enough validation for me of like people that said they will spend money on this thing in some capacity. It's people I trust that if I come back in 3 months or 6 months, it doesn't really matter. They'll be like, oh yeah, okay. I do remember that.
Yeah, people usually stream at this point and say, that's not validation, right? It's only validation if they give you their credit cards. But
the idea is sort of, it also, I'm really scared because I know like 3 or 4 companies that are going to be making this. And so I'm like, do I move fast? Do I hire some developers? No, I have that like almost weekly struggle of like, you know, this isn't going as fast as I thought, coding it myself. Okay, maybe I should... hire someone, or you know, the people are always screaming to each other on indie hackers, and indie makers are always screaming at each other, just ship it. And I'm like, I know. So, but then I keep getting distracted by making stuff in Google Sheets and shipping that, and people buy it. Like, newsletter creator got like 5 sales, and I'm like, oh, that was surprising. I was like, I didn't think anyone would buy that. I don't know, have low expectations maybe and get surprised.
Like,
also, I know I'm on the right path because I spend $1,000 in newsletter ads, and I'm like, oh, if I spent $1,000 in newsletter ads, there should be other people that want to spend $1,000.
Absolutely, yeah, me included. So, yeah, keep me. So, do you have like a launch date in mind, or is it complete?
Yeah, November 1st, 2020. That was literally the original launch. If anyone is listening to this, we are recording on, what day is today? December 16th?
17th, yeah.
17th. Yeah, the original launch date was supposed to be November 1st. But you know how all like programming goes. Like,
sure.
Everything takes 3 times as long as you imagined. And I was like, oh, I'll get this done in a month. And it'll probably end up being about 3 months.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. So thank you so much for taking the time. And I will reach out to you like in a month or so about another episode in case you're interested.
Awesome. This is fantastic.
Well, yeah, maybe we can then hear about the project launch.
Maybe. I'll reiterate this. It's like, I might end up just launching it in a Google Sheet. I'm like, I'm coding in Google Sheets like literally every day now with these like little things that are just, I can make right away. Like everything I can do, I can almost make in a day in a Google Sheet now. And I'm like getting addicted to it. You're right. Like, I'm like thinking now, can I do what I'm trying to do in a Google Sheet?
Yeah, it's the same for me with Airtable currently. So as you maybe know, the last project was also built in Airtable. So it gets addicting.
Yeah.
So because it's so fast.
Yeah. And once you, and it's that muscle, right? Once you know how to do certain things, you add a little twist to it. You're like, oh, that worked. Well, what will this work? I just noticed myself. I made a click tracker 2 weeks ago in a Google Sheet, in a Google web app. So you can see how many clicks you get, like a bit.ly in a Google Sheet. And now it's a part of every sheet that I read. And I'm like, oh, I already have the code, copy, paste. And the code's available for everyone who's a Better Sheets member. So like, that's also one of the reasons why I put out the list. I was like, why aren't people making copies of this? And then I finally started getting a couple people that emailed me back. It's like, oh, I am making I'm going to try to put this template that I've made since watching your videos out. I'm going to put this template out on Gumroad. I'm going to put this, 2 people like this week send me that. And so I'm like, oh, thank God it's happening. I had to like sort of maybe push them a little bit.
Yeah. And you can use then this like success stories on your landing page.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. So it was really heartbreaking to have 0 success stories. That's why I had to like do the Twitter templates. That's why I did the newsletter creators. Like, at least let me eat my own dog food and just like put something out on Gumroad that like is viable immediately. Yeah. And so hopefully I'll have a couple of good success stories. And have a good lunch. Thanks so much for chatting so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.